Welcome to Scoop and Scale, where we dish up the science and weigh facts about mostly equine nutrition. I'm Michelle Anderson. I spent 2 decades working in equine media, and I currently create content and help veterinarians and businesses connect with horse owners through my consulting business, Cadence Marketing and Media. I'm a trail rider, dressage rider, and an at-home horse keeper.
And I'm equine nutrition consultant, Dr. Claire Tunis of Clarity Equine Nutrition. I develop diet plans for horses ranging from metabolic seniors to Olympic athletes. I also consult for equine nutrition companies. I'm a scientist, dressage rider, and a pony club mom.
Claire and I collaborated for years when I was the editor of an equine publication, and she was one of our regular contributors. We'd finished work, but we always had more to talk about. New products, new research, and our own horses. This podcast is an extension of those conversations. It's for anyone who wants to make better choices when it comes to feeding and caring for their own horses.
And before we get started, a quick disclaimer. The information in this podcast is general and not meant to replace the individualized advice of your own qualified equine nutritionist or veterinarian. While I have a PhD in nutrition, I'm not a veterinarian and can't give medical advice.
With that, thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the following episode. Horse show, the first one that I've shown in, other than one time that I did a material class with my young horse in the last 7 years. So it had been a very long time, and I forgot how stressful it can be for me to go to a horse show.
Yeah. A lot of moving parts, aren't there?
Yes. And how stressful it can be on our horses. So I thought today would be a good opportunity for us to talk about stress during travel at horse shows on our horses and what we can do nutritionally to support them and to support their GI health, which can be a problem when horses are stressed out.
I think that's a great idea, because the majority of the US is sort of, if you haven't been in a warm, sunny climate entering show season, so probably the next couple of months, pretty much everybody in the country has an opportunity to show if they want to.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that we aren't showing this coming weekend, because there's snow on the ground here and we had to go over a mountain pass. We really lucked out with the weather last weekend, and we did make it to the show, which was great because we had a 3.5 hour drive over the mountains to get there.
We had a pony club rally on Saturday, which I organized. That was equally stressful. Let's just say heating is stressful. Organizing a show is also stressful.
You are a good pony club mom, and we need more of you.
Yeah, we had a great day. We had kids came all the way from Colorado to Arizona, so it was really nicely attended little event. We were very lucky because it rained the next day. It was funny how serendipitous the weather can be sometimes for these outdoor shows. But on the back of that, my daughter has qualified if she wants to be able to go to Pony Club National Championships, which is held at the Kentucky Horse Park. Used to be every 3 years. It's now going to be every other year. So it's one of her dream things she wants to do. So yeah, so now I'm looking at potentially shipping a horse from Arizona to Kentucky in July, which it'll be hot. So yeah, now lots of potential stress there. Yeah, and humid too. So definitely on my radar.
Why is going to a show and traveling so stressful for our horses?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? I mean, I think we have to remember the kinds of animals they are, right? They're herd animals. And if nothing else, we're taking them out of their herd and taking them and putting them potentially sort of in a different herd and in a completely new environment with completely new things to worry about, right? And they're such visual stimuli, sound stimuli, new smells. You know, I've been reading fabulous book, The Horse Brain, Human Brain. And I'm not going to remember the author off the top of my head, but, you know, I hadn't appreciated how much smell is important to horses, you know, and it's possible that they actually have as good a sense of smell as dogs, which we know of as being brilliant, right? You know, the smell of a new environment, the smell of all these different horses and seeing different things. I mean, you know, you probably don't have banners and flags waving in your arena at home very often or whatever. It's just these new visual stimuli. It's a lot for an animal that is always scanning its environment, looking for the lion and the tiger, because that's how it's wired from an evolutionary standpoint. It's a lot of new things to take in and a lot of potential stress, and they really don't know it's okay.
And I would say their humans can be very stressed also.
And that's a horse show situation. Part of it, right? Again, as that flight species, they're hardwired to be able to pick up on the energy in the environment. So like you said, you were so stressed this weekend with your show after 7 years. Like if you're projecting that angst, or even if you're just maybe normally a pretty chill, you know, end of the day, go to the barn, this is awesome. But then all of a sudden you've become this slightly uptight, like, oh my God, why do I do that 10 meter circle? And is it the shoulder into the traver, or is it, do I go from KXM or is that P? And they're suddenly like, who are you? I'm looking to you for some moral support here and you're being a total weirdo.
Right.
How do we get them there? I mean, let's not even forget, we put them in a tiny dog box that rattles and bangs for goodness knows how long to get there, maybe on their own, maybe with a friend. Trailering is hard work. I know I've noticed like a couple of times on the way back from multi-day shows that we've been to with our pony, he is an extraordinary loader. He's brilliant, right? There are times we laugh and my daughter's like, Mom, open the door. Really wants to get in the trailer kind of thing. And you throw the rope over and he loads himself. And he's like, really like, let's go somewhere. He loves going places. But it's interesting because a few of our multi-day shows, and we've only been doing multi-day shows for a little while, when we go to leave, he's a little bit like, you know, and you have to be like, come on, buddy, we're going home. And it just suddenly dawned on me recently, I think he's just tired. He's tired. And that realization that we've got 3 hours in the trailer to get home, or an hour and a half, and it's going to be more rattling, and they're having to use their postural muscles or whatever, stabilizer muscles to stay stable. I mean, it's like doing trot sets in the trailer. So it's not that he doesn't want to load and he's a bad loader. He's just no fool. Yeah. And he's like, I'm already tired. I've been here for 3 days and I've worked my tail off. And now I have to kind of go suck it up because I know I've got another hour of hard work in front of me.
I think it's important in this conversation to consider that it's not just horse shows. So for our listeners, right, maybe you aren't showing, but if you're a trail rider and you're going horse camping or just hauling out, even to ride off trailer, your horse isn't used to traveling. Or if you're going to a longer endurance ride, which would be a big event, or even just going to a clinic can be just as stressful. The horse doesn't know the difference between going on a trail ride and going to a horse show. And it comes with the same thing, especially group trail rides where you have a bazillion horses and then you add in dogs and kids and trailers coming and going and everything.
Maybe your weather is such that you haven't been doing much all winter, but now you can trailer out to your trainer's barn to take a lesson. It could just be that simple. You're just showing up at a random barn that they don't normally go to and you're taking a lesson and then going home. So all of it counts as stress if you're the horse.
What are the risks of stress to the horse's digestive health specifically? I know, especially with younger horses, when they are really new to traveling, you can get things like diarrhea or sloppy wet manure. Obviously, it's affecting their gut. What are the risks?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all seen the horse that, you know, comes out and there's the trailer and all of a sudden there's like runny poos going left, right, and center. And some of that is just adrenaline, right? Affecting gut motility is that just that adrenaline flow of they become hypermobile. Your gut becomes a little hypermobile. And so they're going to get loose manure. And that's that classic sort of anxiety pooping kind of thing. And it tends to be loose because they're pooping it out earlier than they planned to kind of thing. So you haven't had the water resorption in the small colon to kind of make proper fecal balls. But we also know, as you know, as we're doing more and more research into the microbiome, which is the hindgut where the microbial population lives. And we're starting to see that it doesn't take a lot of stress, especially in the form of, we've had some sort of mock transportation studies where they tie the horses for, say, 12 hours to mimic being in a trailer with their heads tied. And then they look at the microbial population of manure and they see that it changes. And the diversity of microbes in that manure changes and can change quite dramatically. You know, you actually want a diverse population of bacteria in the hindgut, because if you've got a diverse population, then you're sort of ready for anything, right? You can handle a lot of different things. And so if your population is becoming less diverse, that's not a good thing. And it's very early stages research. It's quite interesting. And there's a lot more research being done on it, but it happens quite quickly, as I said, within those 12 hours. And it can take several days to actually, when they map it on the back end of how long does it take to go back to normal, it can take several days. So that really makes me think about the horses that travel quite frequently and what effect is that having, where we, you know, they just get back to normal and then, oh, just kidding, off we go again, there's another show kind of thing. What effect is that having? It can be quite destabilizing to the microbial population in the hindgut, I think.
We haven't on this podcast yet talked a lot about the microbiome, but what are those microbes doing and how are they helping with food digestion? And do we fully know what they're doing in there?
We're learning more and more. We're learning more about what the microbial population that each horse has kind of says about that horse. And, you know, there's some suggestion that, for example, horses that have metabolic disorders may have slightly different microbial profiles than those that don't. And that's coming directly off the human research. I mean, it's fascinating, right? We now know that whether you're fed formula as an infant human or breast milk actually impacts the microbiome of your hindgut and can for decades. We know whether you're born vaginally or by cesarean section can change the microbial population in your colon as a human being for life. I find it fascinating. I find it really interesting. And we're a little bit behind in the horse world is what we're looking at. But in the horse, what we're talking about is the microbial population and the protozoa and the fungi and what have you that live in the horse's cecum and large colon. And their primary purpose is to ferment the structural carbohydrates that occur in forages. And obviously in a natural setting, we have talked about before, you know, horses evolved eating a lot of forage of low nutritional value. And the only way that they have to be able to break that down is thanks to these microbes and protozoa fungi in the hindgut. And so they have what is called the symbiotic relationship where the microbes, fungi, protozoa do that for the horse. And in turn, the horse kind of, you know, is consuming all this feed to help maintain those microbial populations. And so there's this sort of relationship that goes on between the two, between the host and the microbes. And if you change what the horse is eating, then the microbial population changes. If you stress the horse out and you make that hindgut environment not optimal for the types of bacteria that should be living there, then that microbial population starts to shift and change, and certain microbes will die off and others will become more prevalent, and you change the dynamics and the infrastructure of that microbial population. And then in turn, that has an impact on, for example, perhaps the byproducts that get released as a result of that microbial population. And the horse is using those byproducts. And so some of the most important byproducts that we get from that are what we call volatile fatty acids. They break down these complicated carbohydrates and release these volatile fatty acids, which is called acetate, butyrate, propionate. And those get absorbed by the horse and can be metabolized into forms of energy or other substrates that the horse then uses. So actually, in horses that are fed nothing but hay, can be as much as almost 80% of their daily calorie requirement actually comes from the absorption of these volatile fatty acids that are the result of microbial fermentation. So you can imagine that if you alter that microbial population, you're going to alter the substrates available then to the horse to make energy from. One of those that I mentioned, butyric acid, is particularly interesting because butyric acid is actually really important to the gut lining, to the integrity of the gut lining. The cells that line the gut lining have a need for butyric acid. So if you're not getting enough butyric acid being made as a byproduct of microbial fermentation, that can actually then impact the health of your gut lining. And you can end up kind of in this negative spiral. And it's thought to lead to, you know, if you don't have enough butyric acid and the cells that line the gut lining maybe are not held together as strongly as they could be, then you might get something called leaky gut syndrome that a lot of people have heard about, where now there's kind of gaps between the cells lining the gut lining and compounds can start crossing into the bloodstream that shouldn't, and all those kinds of things. So it's really maintaining a healthy microbial population and a really strong hindgut is really important to the overall well-being of the horse. And then the other byproduct of microbial fermentation that's really important are B vitamins. So horses actually produce a lot of B vitamins during that fermentation of forage process. And so it's very unusual that we see a B vitamin deficiency in horses because they're generally making enough from the diet they're just consuming. Sometimes we find that maybe what they're creating is not optimal, and some additional B vitamins, for example, people think about hoof health and biotin, right? It's like we see in horses, some horses benefit from a little extra biotin, and that's a B vitamin the microbes are actually making for the horse, but some more is sometimes helpful. But obviously, if you have a disrupted hindgut population, then the horse's ability to manufacture adequate B vitamins might be impacted. And B vitamins are really important for the functioning of all the horse's metabolic pathways throughout their body. So hindgut health is vital. So traveling to shows and the stress and what we're finding about what that does, the diversity in the microbial population, really could have ramifications for the horse's overall health and well-being beyond just the gut.
My understanding is also, as far as the immune system is concerned, if you have disruption in the good bugs that are in the gut, it gives an opportunity for bad ones to come in and cause problems. So
yeah.
Infectious diseases and imbalances can cause problems for the horse's health as well.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, I think we forget that every single one of us has salmonella in our GI tract right now.
Gross.
And E. coli. And our horses do too. And it's just fine because we're healthy. We have strong immune systems and the little amount that's in there, we just kind of keep it tamped down and just like, nah, you don't get to play here. We're overwhelming you. You just get to sit in the corner. But obviously, if you start disrupting, like you suggested, the healthy bacterial population, there's a chance then for those guys that have been quietly sitting in the corner to be like, hey, now we get a say in how things go around here, right? And suddenly you end up with pathogenic bacteria taking hold and potential for disease and other things to happen. And the GI tract is a massive part of the horse's immune system. We don't think about that, but it is a barrier. The lining of the GI tract is a physical barrier between, you know, everything you're eating and the rest of your body. And if the integrity of that barrier is at all less than ideal, then there's a chance there for a number of things to happen. But, you know, the body tries really hard to kind of maintain that and can definitely influence overall systemic immune health.
Yeah, so it can make the horses susceptible to infectious disease, and then colitis specifically can become a problem with the hind gut. And that's something that we see when horses are on certain antibiotics for different reasons. That becomes an issue as well. It's something that's really important to keep in mind. I also get concerned traveling with my horses on the other side with dehydration, keeping the horses hydrated, and the risk of impaction colic. So we're talking about two opposite issues.
Yeah.
But how does hydration play into the gut's health while we're traveling and at horse shows? And what can we do to keep them hydrated? Especially that time in the horse trailer always makes me a little nervous, especially when it's going over 3 hours without water.
Yeah,
I would never have my horses at home without access to water for 3 hours.
Right.
I would never have it.
Not unless you've been told to, just because you're getting them scoped for ulcers or something. But yeah, it's like not a good thing. Not at all. The most simple answer is you need water just for lubrication, right? Just to lubricate everything passing through the gut. And because so much of what we feed horses is, especially in a horse trailer type situation, dry hay. So that could therefore be particularly tricky if you're somebody that like keeps your horses at home on pasture and then shows. We've talked about this in previous episodes, right? Transitioning from a moist diet of pasture to a dry diet of hay. And they may not be thinking they need to drink very much because they're just not really used to having to drink that much. Yeah, your risk for impaction definitely goes up. And I think we also don't appreciate how much horses sweat in trailers. And I wanted to say, golly, it was years ago now. I remember seeing an article, I think it was actually published in a magazine in the UK, and it was talking about the amount of sweat loss from different activities. And somebody had looked at the amount of sweat loss. It was something like a 13, 14-hour trailer ride or 10-hour trailer ride. It was a long way anyway. And the amount of sweat that was lost was the equivalent to the sweat loss from doing an old traditional format speed and endurance day at a 3-day event. So roads and tracks, steeplechase, roads and tracks, cross country. That was pretty mind-blowing to me. That you could trailer your horse for 10 hours and they could lose that kind of fluid and electrolyte. And we don't realize because there's a lot of airflow in trailers, or we hope there's a lot of airflow in trailers. You want a lot of airflow in trailers for respiratory health. And so the air moving over them often stops them from being obviously sweaty. So you take them out of the trailer, they don't look like they actually sweat that much, but they have been. It's a little clammy down by their hair root kind of thing. And then the air has been moving over them and kind of taking that away. So you don't realize. And so, yes, not only are they not drinking very much because the opportunity is somewhat limited, but secondly, they're also potentially sweating and dehydrating that way. So it can be kind of a double-edged sword. So hydration is really important. And people really struggle sometimes to get their horses to drink when they're away from home.
And I believe in episode 6, we talk about salt and hydration and keeping horses drinking. Would go in depth in that episode, but I think briefly, do you have some suggestions for getting horses to drink once you're at the show?
One of the things I run into, actually talking to somebody just recently, but you know, a lot of our big show facilities are what I call like municipal show facilities, right? They're on the edge of urban environments, and so they're often on the city water supply
and chlorine in there.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but quite a lot of barns are not on city water supply. They might be on well water. And so they have a lot of different, what we call salts in them, right? We have to dissolve solids or salts in water, and that affects the taste. And I think, like I talked about earlier in this episode, smell is so important to horses, that chlorine, I mean, we can sometimes smell the chlorine in tap water. Horses probably most certainly can. And if that's not a smell that they're used to, they may not even want to go near it just because of the smell. So there are some tips and tricks you can do to help with that. Ideally, you've been doing, you know, what we suggested in episode 6 and giving your, you know, 2 tablespoons of salt every day to your horse, just even if it's not working or doing anything very much. And so it's already in a good electrolyte status before you leave home. There is this belief among some people that they're going to like mega load electrolytes for 2 or 3 days before. I mean, if you want to do that, great, but your horse is not going to store more electrolytes than they need. So in reality, most of that, if your horse is already in good electrolyte status, it's just going to go straight out the back end. So you're better off just making sure that every day of the year they're in good baseline electrolyte status, and then continuing to do your salt and electrolytes while you're traveling that you would do at home. What we call tainting the water, making it taste of something else, can be really helpful. But ideally, you would start that at home before you leave. It doesn't work so well if you wait until you're on the road or at the show. So by that, I mean adding something like apple juice or Kool-Aid to the water in a dilute amount, apple cider vinegar some people use. But the smell of that can sometimes then overrun the smell of the chloride, the vinegary smell. And we're talking like trace amounts, just enough to make it a bit different. And you have to do it at home because you have to make the horse believe that this is what their water tastes like all the time. And then they go to the new location and it still smells like that, right? So that's why it doesn't work if you don't start it until you get to your destination. There are some products out there that you put in the water, like almost like a handful of grain type of thing. That will work for some horses, like a handful of sweet feed in the water will work. My biggest caution is always make sure that there's plain water available as well. Because it can backfire. If you make all your water taste different and they have a protest over it, now you've just gone and made it so your horse won't drink at home as well, or whatever. So always try it at home before you leave and make sure that what you're adding is show legal.
Yes. So check with your governing body. They should have a list of banned substances and just always check. It's your responsibility as the competitor to make sure. And it's not up to the supplement companies to label things in any way, or even your vet probably has a good idea of what's banned and what's not. But at the end of the day, you're the one showing. And so it is your responsibility to make sure that your horse hasn't had anything that they shouldn't have. A good reminder for that.
Absolutely. And I think that it's a good reminder too, that outside of hydration products, that's true for every supplement. You know, there are some joint products that have compounds in that might not be legal. Like if you do endurance, MSM, I don't believe is.
It isn't. Legal. Yeah. Well, don't take my word for it though.
Right.
Don't trust the voice on the podcast. I'm not the final say. It's your governing body.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, things like a lot of people use calming supplements and are really tempted to use calming supplements at shows. And even though that sort of goes against the, I believe like Yusuf has a statement, something about anything that you give to potentially calm a horse is not seem to be great sportsmanship. But that aside, some of the things like valerian and chamomile and those kinds of things are prohibited. So you have to be really careful with your day-to-day supplements, especially if you haven't shown in a long time. Right? Things can have changed.
Yes. Yep. Definitely check. And then like at the show this weekend, I added water to my horse's grain feedings. And by grain, I mean his concentrate feedings with his ration balancers and all of his good stuff just for an extra. He's a good traveler. Is used to showing, drinks plenty, but just a little extra water in his grain too. Just
soaking hay can help, especially in the trailer. And that has the added benefit of getting rid of any dust when you're in an enclosed space where air quality can be lower than normal because they're in an enclosed box. So soaking the hay can really help get water into them too. Just even just for 30 minutes, soaking it and then feeding it, that can really help. And there are some forages on the market that is designed specifically to be fed with water. Or like, as you say, you know, doing soupy mashes or something like that can be really great ways of getting water into them.
And these risks of digestive health for horses during travel, we haven't specifically mentioned the big one. If that's
a drum roll effect or something.
Yeah.
I know, that's the one everyone worries about.
And that's gastric ulcers. Gastric ulcer crosses over into vet territory. So definitely if you suspect your horse has gastric ulcers or is susceptible, talk to your vet. They're the ones who can help you out and can confirm diagnosis by scoping. It's the only way, from my understanding of verifying that a horse does have gastric ulcers or not, is by doing a scope.
And that's true. And even beyond that, it's the kind of ulcers. And at some point, we'll do an episode on ulcers. But like, you know, there are different types of ulcers and they require different types of treatment. So if you don't scope, you don't know what you're dealing with. And you could be spending an awful lot of money and not giving the right stuff. So definitely scope.
Yeah. So we take our horses to shows. They're more prone to get gastric ulcers. We know horses that compete or are in training, it's like 90% plus of horses have them. But even like your horses just hanging out, the research has shown 60% of horses that are just kind of recreational or hanging out in the backyard, horses will still have gastric ulcers. So with that in mind, something that for me going into this show that I wanted to do was give my horse support using Ulcer Guard. And that is an omeprazole. It's an FDA approved omeprazole product used for prevention of gastric ulcers, not treating. And it is available over the counter. But of course, I'd have had those conversations with my vet on how to support my horses when I'm traveling. So is Ulcer Guard something that you find your clients use or something that you give to your horses when you...
Yeah, it is. And I often find it's given wrong. And at $50 a tube or thereabouts in that kind of territory, you'd like to get it right. What I find is that people think, oh, I'm going to the show, they take it with them, and then they get to the show and they start giving it.
Yeah.
Well, it actually takes several days to actually really have the major benefits. So you should probably start it at least 3 days before you go. And again, your vet can give you the advice on specifically, you know, when to start it. But it's, you know, if you start it at the show, it won't be effective until you're on your way home, you know? So yes, you need to start it several days before. And my understanding is it does need to be given on an empty stomach, omeprazole. So again, that might mean if you're boarding, getting yourself out of bed really early to get to the barn before your barn feeders feed on those few days before you go to the show. Or hopefully maybe you've got barn staff that are savvy and willing to do it before they feed and then not feed your horse for 30 minutes afterwards. So that's how you're going to get the maximum effect out of it. But the type of ulcers that we're the most at risk of getting at a show are, we understand them pretty well, are what we call squamous ulcers. And those are ulcers that really, I just recently was at a conference a couple of months back that was coordinated by Kentucky Equine Research, and Dr. Ben Sykes was presenting, and he's considered to be one of the world's leading authorities on equine gastric ulcers. And so he talked at length about them and the different kinds. And he was really saying that we have a pretty good handle now on what causes squamous ulcers. And it really is dietary factors such as, you know, the amount of forage that the horse is getting, it's the amount of carbohydrate that they have in the diet, and then the amount of exercise or cumulative exercise that they're getting. So the harder the horse is working, the more readily available carbohydrate in the diet, and the lower the amount of forage they get, that's like the perfect storm for getting, you know, squamous ulcers. And so when you think about it, that's why shows become such a risk factor for those kinds of ulcers, because you're probably, you know, they're working harder. Maybe you've increased your grain a little bit because the horse is going to be working pretty hard for 3 or 4 days. So, you know, if your typical grain is a higher starch grain and now you're feeding more of it, you've increased that starch grain load. Maybe they're working harder than they are at home normally. Or again, just the stress of the work that they're doing, the intensity of it. You know, let's say you've gone to the show to do, many of us are not doing meter 60 jumpers, but let's pretend we are. You know, and you go to the show to do meter 60 jumpers, you're probably not doing that at home every day, but you're practicing a much lower level. So the level of intensity is far less. And so we do create this sort of perfect scenario for these horses to develop these kinds of ulcers. And I personally lived it last year. I mean, my daughter went to, you know, I created this perfect storm for it, and it just kind of was what it was. It was unfortunate. We go back out of the area sometimes for Christmas, either back to the UK or visit friends out of state. And we did that. And the pony went and spent 2 weeks sort of a dressage boot camp with our dressage trainer. And that was super. We came back, we brought him home, and then we had an IEA show. So he went to the IEA show and got ridden an IEA. And IEA is an amazing organization, which kids get to like pull a horse out of a hat kind of thing. And so he was ridden by 3 or 4 people that he'd never been ridden by before. We came back from that. We were home for 3 or 4 days. And then we left and went to our first rated dressage show for 4 nights. And he did fabulously, and he won several of his classes at this rated dressage show, did really well, really pleased with him. And then 10 days later, he wouldn't canter and was really grouchy and really unhappy and just started shutting down. And luckily I kind of have the knowledge that I have, but I was able to kind of step back and go, oh, hang on a minute. This is just screaming gastric ulcers. And when I look back at what he had gone through over that month period, it had sort of been this perfect storm of setting him up for that in a way. And so I wasn't surprised that that was potentially what we had going on. And so we had him scoped and we dealt with it. And sure enough, there were some ulcer issues there and we dealt with it. And he was fine again afterwards, but definitely lived everything we're talking about here today personally.
I know.
So, and I definitely don't want the ulcers because let me tell you, none of the treatment protocols are easy to do.
Not easy and not inexpensive.
Not inexpensive, not easy to do. So taking the measures to avoid them going forward is definitely the way to go. So we definitely do that now.
Well, when you're in the feed store in the aisle, there's lots of different options for buffers for their stomachs. Yeah. So this gastric ulcers have something to do with the pH in the stomach and acidity in the stomach. And so we have these buffer products, which I like to think of as just horse Tums that we're giving.
Yep.
How effective are those in managing or preventing gastric ulcers at horse shows? Like, are those something that you should start when you're there beforehand, like with the ulcer guard? Is it something your horse should be getting every day? Does one time a day help them? Like if I take a Tums once a day, that's not going to cover me for, like, if I have the Tums, if my stomach's upset or I have indigestion, I'm shoveling the Tums all day until I feel better.
Right?
What are these products and how can they help and how do you use them?
They definitely can help. And you're right. So the problem is that horses are secreting stomach acid constantly, whether they're eating or not, because they evolve to be eating almost constantly. And when they're chewing, they're secreting saliva, and saliva is actually high in buffering compounds. It's high in sodium bicarbonate. And so it's a beautiful system because that constantly secreted saliva is constantly buffering the stomach acid and helping to neutralize it and make it less damaging. And the bottom portion of the horse's stomach where the acid is secreted from, because that's where it's secreted from, it has protections against the acid. So it has a lot of mucus. It actually secretes its own bicarbonate. And that area is pretty well protected from the acid because it's designed to be bathed in acid. The problem is that the upper portion of the stomach, and I sort of alluded to the name of this earlier, that's the squamous tissue. That tissue does not secrete stomach acid and it's never really meant to come into contact with stomach acid. And so therefore it has no natural protection against stomach acid. Its natural protection against stomach acid is the hope that the horse is eating enough to create enough buffering saliva to keep the acid from becoming too acidic, and that there's enough fiber in the diet that the fiber is absorbing all the acid and kind of keeping it in the bottom part of the stomach so it's less able to splash around up the top. So, you know, I mentioned earlier the talk that Dr. Sykes gave where he talked about, you know, the risks associated with reducing roughage intake. That's why that's an issue, because they're going to be chewing less, less saliva, less roughage in the gut to kind of absorb and buffer the stomach acid. So that's where the ideas for having supplement buffers came from. It's like, well, hang on a minute. The horse is supposed to be creating its own buffer, but sometimes we screw that system up with how we manage our horses. And what if we just fed them a buffer and helped them buffer the stomach acid the same way you're taking your Tums? And so they do work. And there is some research showing that they are effective, and some things are more effective than others. People probably may be aware of the research that was done at Texas A&M looking at alfalfa. That's one of the reasons why a small amount of alfalfa, and we talk about that in episode one, where we talk all about alfalfa. Alfalfa is really high in calcium, and that calcium carbonate, as we know, is kind of the foundation of your Tums. And so feeding things that are high in calcium is going to help buffer that stomach acid. So having some alfalfa in the diet where it's suitable for that horse can be helpful. So a lot of our over-the-counter buffer products for horses have calcium carbonate in. They might have magnesium oxide in them because magnesium also helps buffer. And so you see sometimes there are powdered supplements that you can give. Sometimes there are pelleted products that you can give, right? I mean, it started off, I think, Purina were the first ones to kind of do that with their Outlast product. Now many of the manufacturers have buffering feeds that you can give as sort of a supplemental buffering product. But to your point, they don't buffer forever. The research suggests that some of those buffer better than others, and that most they're probably going to buffer for 3 or 4 hours tops, maybe only 2 or 3. So I think they're very helpful. And I think they actually, where they really come in helpful is being fed like right before you work the horse. Because again, I alluded to earlier, the amount of exercise and the intensity of the exercise can be a problem, because as you're trotting and cantering and galloping around, all that acid is splashing about in there. And especially if the horse hasn't eaten in a long time, there's nothing to stop it splashing around. Putting that buffer in there in that situation is a really good idea. It'll cover you while you're riding, giving it before you trailer, because you mentioned your show is 3 hours away. It would pretty much just get you to the show and keep your horse's stomach more neutral while you're in the trailer and they're having that added stress. So yeah, absolutely. I think they have a place, but they're not going to help you out for 24 hours. They're going to help you out for 2 or 3 hours here and there.
And they're not going to treat gastric ulcers if your horse has gastric ulcers. So they don't take the place of the drugs that your vet would prescribe to actually treat.
They are part of a prevention program and a larger management program. And I would, again, caution people that, you know, if you've had a horse diagnosed with ulcers, you really have to take a hard and fast look at how you're managing your horse and if there's anything you can do to change your management so they don't come back. And maybe all you can do is start feeding a buffer. But I would hope that you wouldn't just rely on that, that you'd actually make other pretty major management changes in addition.
And part of that is making sure your horse has some forage before you ride. So even at the show, I made sure that my horse had his little bit of alfalfa. I saved it for, because he does get alfalfa in his normal ration. So he got his alfalfa while we were braiding to get ready so that he had a little hay mat in his stomach, which can help. The alfalfa has calcium in it. That's the Tums. And then you have the hay mat that helps with the splashing. It's what the research that I've seen has shown to help. I did end up with green breeches when I got off. And we have green slime, so that's the sacrifice that I make for his comfort. It's having someone with a rag to wipe the green off his face and then making sure that I have a backup set of white breeches, but something also to keep in mind. Speaking of the forage while you're at a show and traveling, why is it important to make sure that you bring your own forage if you can? You can't always. There's some instances when you can't take your own forage to shows.
Yeah.
Those of us who don't show internationally probably aren't facing that.
Well, I don't know that I don't think I'm going to be taking our own forage to Kentucky.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be able to take a bale, but probably not enough for the almost 2 weeks we'll be there. So, no, but ideally you would. And that's because, you know, that microbial population, as we hinted at earlier, kind of is specific to the diet that you're feeding. And so when you change diet, especially forages in regards to the hindgut, that microbial population has to have time to kind of adapt and say, ooh, okay, different type of hay. And here's a big thing, mistake people make is they might be feeding orchard grass hay and switch to another orchard grass hay. And they think, well, it's orchard grass hay. It's no different. But actually the chemical composition of that orchard grass hay could be quite different. The amount of sugar in it, protein, calcium, fat, you know, it could be quite different orchard to orchard kind of thing. And so then you've got these bugs in the hindgut going, oh, this one's, you know, got 3% more sugar than the last one. And wow, it's really stemmy and stiff and hard to ferment. And we're going to have to get some different bacteria, you know, in here to kind of help. Hey, you guys over there that haven't been doing much the last month on this other hay, we need you kind of thing. There's going to be this shift in bacteria, that population that happens. And if that's a pretty radical shift and it happens really quickly, well, one of things can happen, right? You can end up with gas production and then gas colic. You can end up with it being so different that some of the resident bacteria are like, oh, we're out of work, and they actually die off. And as they die off, they release toxins, and those toxins can cause problems to the horse. You could get diarrhea, or you could get colic, you know, a number of things. So research suggests that when you change hay, I think your colic risk goes up for about 3 weeks afterwards. And when you throw on top of that all the added issues we've been talking about already with trailering somewhere new and being in the backcountry for a week randomly all of a sudden, or you know, whatever it is you're doing with your horse, obviously your colic risk goes up. So we would like to maintain the forage as similar as we can when we're away from home. And as you said, that's not always possible. And so just have to do what you can.
And make sure that you've done the other preventive things before you go to help.
Yeah. And I do think that this is a good time. These are the scenarios where perhaps adding a pre-postbiotic type supplement to your horse's diet might be a good idea as an insurance policy, right? So, you know, a lot of the feeds that I generally work with and recommend already have pretty good pre-probiotic type packages built into the feed. And I think as a day-to-day support, that's fine. But if you're putting your horse through added stress, or you have a horse that you know, for example, again, like my daughter's pony, who had really no experience of going to multi-day shows at the beginning of 2023, his manure would get really loose really quickly and smell really bad. I mean, it was clear he was upset. And he's, you know, in a 12 by 12 show box stall and at home, he's in a really nice big, you know, 15 by 33 and, you know, whatever. And he was clearly not happy. You could just tell by looking at his manure, it was soft and it smelled really bad. These days, you know, give it 12, 15 months later, and he's now done multiple multi-day shows and he's a much more relaxed character and his manure is perfectly normal all weekend. It's still a bit stinky, but form-wise, it's proper balls. And the interesting thing is at home, he makes really nice piles in the corner or the back. And at the shows, generally, it's a mayhem, right? Because it's a smaller space and it's just all churned in. Well, the last show we went to, they were all nice piles kind of at the back. And I was like, oh, you've relaxed enough that you're not even walking that much, you know, pacing that much anymore. So they learn to handle it and get better at it. But he is definitely a horse that would be one where you'd say, you know what, I might just put him on a little bit of prebiotic support starting a couple of days before we leave and throughout the show, just as an insurance policy.
You mentioned the stalls being confined at the shows. That's something I think that's important too, is keeping the horses moving. And I think lots of times we think of that, oh, we need to stretch their body and we need to get them out of the stalls and hand walk them while we're at the shows. But how can hand walking and movement and exercise help with the digestive system as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just kind of helps keep everything moving, right? Just kind of helps stimulate the digestive tract, peristalsis through the digestive tract. So we know that's super important. And again, it's what they evolved to be doing, right? To be walking multiple miles per day, continually eating and grazing as they go. And so, you know, especially if you have a horse who gets turnout at home for any amount of time, you're probably looking at multiple hand walks per day to continue that similar movement. And, you know, again, to get your horse out, let them see where they are, see what's going on, see that there are other horses around.
Well, we're close to out of time, but we had one more thing we wanted to touch on, and that was biosecurity. We know the horses, their immune systems are going to be compromised when they're traveling. That's why we see these big outbreaks of respiratory diseases at horse shows. You know, horses are under stress. Digestively, we have some specific things that affect the digestive system. I think of coronavirus, which is not the same as COVID.
It's
maybe you can explain that a little bit for people, because I know people got really worried that their horses also had corona early in the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, and I don't claim to be a disease expert.
Yeah, right? I know.
They're just very different strains of things that have similar names. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Not the same at all.
They're a type of virus, but it's not the same virus. So your horse doesn't have COVID. But coronavirus in horses causes pretty significant diarrhea, or can. And that is something that does show up at horse shows. So thinking about your biosecurity, making sure that the stall is clean before you go in. You're the pony clubber with the pony club kids. So you, I'm sure, do a better job of this than I do.
You know, what people don't know is that I also, when I first graduated out of grad school, worked in epidemiology at UC Davis. So I was actually part of a lab that we studied disease spread and we modeled how diseases spread. So, yeah,
it's terrifying.
And it's pretty big background in disease spread and stuff and how we look at that. And one of the things that I learned many years ago, which I didn't realize until I learned it, same with everything, right? You don't know something until you learn it. Come on, Claire. Anyway, just spraying, if you disinfect your stalls, and let's say, I mean, we've all been in that stall, right, that has manure down the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you go in and there's dry manure down the wall from like 3 foot down. Like some horse either stood close to the wall and did a runny poo down the wall. You hope to heck it wasn't projectile, but anyway, manure down the wall. If you take your dilute bleach spray or chlorhexidine spray or whatever it is you're going to use to disinfect your stall before you move your horse in, and you just spray over that, it doesn't really do anything. Because the organic matter in that manure actually sort of basically makes it so that the disinfectant is not as effective. So really, you have to get that off the wall if you really want to disinfect your stalls properly. But yeah, let's be honest. I think the majority of people don't disinfect their stalls before they move in. I mean, years ago, we went to Colorado during a vesicular stomatitis outbreak. And we went in there and I actually bought a backpack pesticide sprayer. I think we had Lysol or whatever. We just cleaned all the stalls before the horses moved in. And it really didn't take that long.
And for listeners, so VS is a disease that affects horses and cattle. And now I'm trying to think. So it's spread usually by flies, I believe.
Yep.
And because it affects cattle and the beef industry and our food source, the main part of our food source, it's taken very, very seriously. And it creates these really painful sores in their mouths.
And it looks like foot and mouth disease, which is very similar, but way more serious. And so people get very excited when they see vesicular stomatitis lesions because the initial panic is, oh my goodness, is that foot and mouth, which is we absolutely don't want in the United States. That was the big one I was actually studying when I was working in epidemiology that we were modeling. Yeah. And it wiped out a lot of my farms in the area I grew up in England back in the early 2000s. So I've definitely lived that nightmare. It's always surprising to me how quickly we forget about these big outbreaks and, you know, how quickly things can spread and how we all become really vigilant and good about our biosecurity. And then
we'll forget about it.
3 months later, we've forgotten about it. So it is important because every year we have EHV1 and we have all these other diseases that can be really quite nasty. And they tend to zoom in on show facilities because
of stressed out horses. In a close proximity.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just waiting for it. Doing things like making sure that, you know, on the feed front, using your own hose to fill your water bucket. Mm-hmm. You know, not using a communal hose to fill your buckets. If you have to use a communal hose, don't let the end of the hose be in the water or touching your bucket. I mean, things as simple as that transfer a disease from bucket to bucket between horse and horse. So there's lots of things you can do to help with biosecurity and feed buckets, like not sharing buckets, feed buckets between horses.
Manure forks. Someone else wants to borrow your manure fork from
seems so silly.
A different aisle.
It's silly until it isn't. And I read a really heartbreaking story of a horse that developed EHV1 a couple of years ago at a show. And they actually, through the disease transmission modeling, were able to figure out that the horse that had brought it into the show had stood next to her in the warm-up arena while she waited to go in.
Yeah.
And 72 hours later, her horse was dead. Biosecurity is no joke. I mean, it's really petty and stupid, but it is until it isn't.
Yeah. No nose-to-nose contact. That's another one. Right. No matter how much they want to greet and sniff each other, try to stop that.
Petting your friend's horse and then petting your horse.
Yeah.
It's all these little things we do that we don't even think about.
Yeah. So. And when they're under stress.
Yeah, exactly. They're set up for it because their immune systems are stressed.
What about after we get home? You're getting ready for the show. You do your ulcer guard, you do your buffers, you pack all your forage, you take them, you make sure that you're hydrated, they have their electrolytes, but then you get home and you're tired. You just drove 3 hours over mountain paths hauling your horse, but it's not done yet. What do you need to do once they're home to make sure that their digestive health is okay to help recover from that stress?
Yeah, I mean, I would continue to monitor them, right? Make sure they're eating the way you expect, that they're drinking the way you would expect. And then I would keep things as normal as possible. I'd give them a couple of easy days work-wise. That might mean you just hand walk them or tack walk them. You know, I do think we have to appreciate that many of the diseases they could pick up while they're off property can take several or more days to really show up. So we do need to kind of be vigilant for several days afterwards. If we're being really good, you know, we're taking temperatures, but let's be honest, most people are probably not doing that. But I know barns that do. They're pretty on that. But that would be an ideal. But yeah, just really kind of keeping things the same. You know, it can be tempting if horses lose weight in transit and what have you. And it can be tempting when you get home to kind of go, oh my gosh, he's lost so much weight. I need to like throw a bunch of food at him. But a little slowly and gradually over time is better than throwing a bunch of stuff at them, trying to help them gain weight again or what have you. So I think it's really just being vigilant and just appreciating the stress they've been under, giving them time to recover. As I mentioned, it can take several days, maybe a week for their microbiome to readapt and get back to normal. So keeping that in mind. And when you're looking at your show schedule, you know, keep that in mind as well, right? It can be really tempting to do all the things and all the shows and what have you.
Every weekend,
you know, especially if you've been shut up all winter and finally you can get out, you know, kind of thing. But consider the reality. Like, I mean, I learned my lesson with our pony when we had him gone for training and then back in a show and back in a show. And he told us that was too much.
Yeah.
Too much stress in too short of a space of time. So they're not machines. They're our partners and we want them to be partners and have a relationship with them that's as good for them as it is for us. So I think we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that is all the time we have for today's topic. We hope that we shared something that will help your horse during the show season or wherever your travels take you. If you'd like to be part of our conversations, please send your suggestions for future topics and your equine nutrition questions to info@scoopandscale.com and is spelled out. That's info@scoopandscale.com. You can also find Claire at clarityequine.com.
Yeah, please make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Share on social media. If you're finding the information useful and you have a horsey friend, tell them about us too. We love referrals. It's the biggest compliment.
For the Scoop and Scale podcast, I'm Michelle Anderson.
And I'm Dr. Claire Tunis.
Thanks for riding along with us.